The following recording is of a candidate forum that was held on Thursday, October 20th, 2022, at the Bozeman Public Safety Center. The forum was sponsored by the Bozeman League of Women Voters, American Association of University Women, Bozeman Professional Women, the Belgrade Community Library, and the Bozeman Public Library, and was moderated by Sally Mason. This is the first part of the forum, which featured candidates for the office of Gallatin County Superintendent of Schools. The candidates were John Nielsen and incumbent Matthew Henry.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Chuck Wynn Community Center. They were nice enough to loan us this room for this event. People are still arriving, and that's great. I just wanted to introduce our moderator, Sally Mason. She's from the League of Women Voters. Would you guys like to introduce yourselves? Say hello.
I think you should get 2 minutes.
Okay.
So we need a mic. Can you make it go better?
Well, I don't think the mic is going to work. Okay. Hello.
No.
But I think we'll be able to hear what you're saying.
Okay, move up front.
Glad I'm sat in the front row.
So the format for tonight's meeting is each candidate gets to introduce himself for 2 minutes. There are timers in the front, gentlemen, and they'll hold up when you have 1 minute left, when you have 30 seconds left, when you have 15 seconds left, and when I get out of the hook. Okay.
Right.
And then we ask them to prepare a question, which I'll read before they start doing it. And then after that, you can ask questions. And I ask heartfeltly that you ask a question, not give a speech, because people have come to listen to these candidates, and they haven't come to listen to me or you guys. So here we are. So who wants to be first to introduce yourself?
I'll go first. So first of all, thanks for having me here. My name is John Nielsen, and I am a candidate for the County Superintendent of Schools.
Speak up.
So maybe need my
teacher voice.
So my history, my qualifications. I didn't come to teaching immediately after going to school. I was an athlete, and then I was a coach. And then I was a guide, and then I was an outdoor educator. And so the process at some point led me to going back to become a classroom teacher. And I chose to be an elementary teacher in the process. I then ended up as a high school teacher, teaching and coaching. And then after being doing that, I ended up kind of falling into the upper elementary grades, third, fourth, and fifth. And wanted a little more out of education, and ended up being an instructional coach here in Bozeman, which meant I worked with teachers doing their professional development work in the classroom with them. I then expanded upon that and did some consulting and worked with teachers all over the state of Montana and some of the states surrounding us as a teacher trainer. That led to being an educational consultant as well. I've trained as a mediator and kept coaching some, and the idea of all that really has been really broad. So my experiences from levels of high school all the way down to third grade, I have lots of other experiences outside of the world of education, and so my qualifications, those 24 years spent as a teacher, have really given me a vision of how things kind of work. I was born and raised in Montana. And so I see the changes that are going on, and I see how to work with everything from the schools that I all worked with. I worked in the public schools, I worked with private schools, and I homeschooled.
Okay.
Great, thank you. I'm Matthew Henry. I'm the Gallatin County Superintendent of Schools, and I was appointed to the position in 2017. Laura Axman was my predecessor, and Laura resigned to take a position at Montfort as the principal. So I finished out her term, and then I was elected in 2018, and now I'm running for re-election. My education experiences, well, I grew up in Ohio, and after college, I moved to Montana to take a position in a one-room school, South Phillips County. That's south of Malta, Montana. And if you know Montana geography, most people say, well, there's nothing 45 miles south of Malta, Montana. Well, there's a little one-room school there, so. In fact, I'll tell you a little story about that. We got the mail 3 days a week, And that was normal for them then. But I remember getting all the mail for like the custodial and the food service purchaser. And I called the chairman of the board, and he was one of the parents. And I said, what do I do with all this mail? And he said, that's you. So anyway, that prompted me to maybe think that I should consider a career in administration someday. So from there, I taught school in Livingston. And then I became a principal, elementary principal, junior high and high school principal in Shields Valley. That's Clyde Park and Wilsall, if you're familiar with Park County. I took a position as the head of school for a private K-12 school here in Bozeman that I did for 8 years. And then I was appointed by the commission in 2017, as I mentioned. So that's my education experience. It's very well suited, I think, to the position because I have experience as a teacher, as a one-room school teacher, as a principal and private school administrator, and all those various facets intersect with the county superintendent's office. So I appreciate doing it, and I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Okay. Welcome. We asked these gentlemen to prepare the following question, and they each get 2 minutes to answer it. In your own words, what is the role of the county superintendent of schools? This was partly because the League of Women Voters was not very well educated about this, and we wanted to know. So that's why the question. And who wants to go first?
That's me. Okay, sure. Well, yeah, thank you. You're not alone. I discovered there are a lot of people that don't know what the county superintendent of schools does. It's not a school district superintendent. That's a common misconception that people have. The county superintendent is... It's an office, countywide office, with a four-year term. It actually predates Montana statehood and the powers and duties of the county superintendent in the Montana law. So because schools who employ their own school district, the county superintendent does not have authority over their day-to-day operations, except for in some cases. But there are four rural school districts in Gallatin County that still do not employ a superintendent. They're one- and two-room schools, in which case the county superintendent functions as their administrator. Otherwise, the duties of the county superintendent are right there in Title 20 of the Montana Code annotated, and they include overseeing school district budgets. I convert school district budgets into mills, that the mills are approved by the county commission. The county commission, upon approval, authorizes the treasurer to levy those. I receive teaching certificates. It's really oversight, making sure that schools are in compliance with the law. I also receive all the homeschool notifications for every homeschool in the county. It really requires a high degree of integrity and fidelity to the law and impartiality and objectivity, as well as educational experience. And that's what I think I bring to the table as the position. Those are my values. And again, as I mentioned, I have a lot of experience, private school, public school, administrative, that all bring to bear to the office.
Okay.
So as I see the role, it's, you know, you really, you know, Matthew explained much of it, but it's you're the accountant for the kids of the county. And so you keep track of where they are, if they're in school, that's the history of that position. There's also some important pieces of financial pieces from the state. Your liaison from the state to those school districts in terms of enrollment means dollars that come to you in the public schools, things like that. So as I see the role in moving forward is that education is starting to change and it's evolved some. And so, you know, how can this role have an effect, you know, families in the county and kids in the county? We've managed the last years of the pandemic and that has created lots of change along with lots of growth. And the process of that change and growth has created some really, you know, awesome options in the county that we haven't had before. We have more homeschooling. We have more private schools. The public schools are, for the most part, doing quite well, although there's some financial issues on their horizon. And so what's new? How can we help them do things that are new? And that's really a piece that, you know, creativity, that problem solving, that's what I've always done. I've always had a classroom of student-driven classrooms where the kids were engaged in their learning at their level, and the families really respected how that worked. And so part of that is how do you have that rapport with the people around you? I worked with administrators, I worked with families, I worked with students. And the idea is, how can we help them move forward and make those best choices for themselves? Where do they need to go? What schools would they like to be in? Who would they like to be their educators? And so that's a piece that I see the role of this as being bigger and being more important as we move forward than what it's just in law as. It can do more for more people and more kids and ultimately be an ally of families and kids in the county.
I'm gonna take the liberty of asking the first question. How many, my daughter has a son who goes to Momberg School, and there are like 9 kids who go to school there, and it's a one-room schoolhouse. How many of those are there in the state or in Gallen County?
One room?
Yeah.
I don't know, but there's 4 that have no administrator, and a couple of them are two-room schoolhouses, essentially, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, there are 4. Cottonwood, Momberg, Spring Hill, and Pass Creek.
Okay.
And they're either one or two-room schools.
Okay, yep. Thank you.
And,
no.
And statewide, this is probably almost a decade old, but there were 53 about a decade ago.
Really?
True one-room schoolhouses,
huh. Yeah. Okay, so you can raise your hand, I'll call on you, ask your questions. Each person will have a minute to answer it. If you ask one of the candidates, if you ask Matthew a question, John gets to answer it as well as vice versa. And you can't ask a yes-no question. You can ask it, but they get to qualify. Okay. So who has a question? Right there.
How many are your staff members? How many do you have in your office?
I have one part-time person, assistant. She works 32 hours a week, 30 hours a week.
Where is it located?
In the county courthouse.
As the county superintendent, for both of you, you're often called upon to mentor or point a family in the direction of being a new homeschooler. How do you handle this situation?
Well, I can answer that one. I just had that conversation with somebody about a week ago, and that I'm not in the position of county superintendent, but I've been doing that for years. Because of the diversity of what I know in town and the fact that I have homeschooled and I know the private schools and have worked with them as well as been in the public schools. So ultimately, sort of how do I deal with that is, you know, I think most families have strong reasons why they want to go that route, whether it's because something didn't work or that's their direction in the first place. But I think that I try to get them to think big picture, like what is it you really want out of this and what are the needs of your child for the most part? Because there are certain things that people don't even know about, that homeschool kids can participate in public school athletics and clubs and things like that. And so that's kind of, I try to lay out some of the extra thought processes for them and, you know, just help them make the best choice they can make.
Well, the responsibility for homeschools, there's a couple of them, but one of them is to give notice to the county superintendent of schools of their intent to homeschool. So in upholding the law fairly and objectively, I receive those and ensure that they're in compliance with the law. My wife's a homeschool mom. I would try to take credit for it, but being a homeschool dad's a little bit like Lamaze class. But I have some familiarity with homeschool curriculum, and I know what's involved in it, and I understand very clearly responsibilities of homeschools to track attendance hours and spit those and immunization records and that sort of thing. So I try to bring my knowledge as a homeschool dad to bear, but I also believe in upholding the law fairly and objectively and in making sure that homeschools follow the law as well as public schools and private schools.
Yes, sir.
Your administrative duties you are the administrator for the 4 small schools, is it correct? How viable are those schools and what's their direction in the future?
Well, it depends on the school, mm-hmm. But I would say overall the trend is they're very viable because what we found in the pandemic is people are seeking alternatives to larger schools. So they're seeking these other options out and they're enrolling as out-of-district families. So Spring Hill School, for example, was at capacity. There are 19 kids. Cottonwood has 19 kids. Pass Creek's at 12, and a lot of young families up in the Pass Creek area. Malberg has a history of ebb and flow in their enrollment that goes back 30, 40 years, you know, anywhere from 9 to 12 to 11 to 5. And so they're right about average at 9 students.
So if your viability is asking, like, how successful they are, is that what you after?
Well, both. You know, do you foresee that they will remain in the future? Is there a place for them?
Yeah, well, Matthew kind of said, I think the trend has been that people are looking to them to some extent for that different setting rather than having 30 kids in a classroom. They like the idea. And, you know, part of it is housing. We have people living out in distances that don't want to send their kids into town. And so there's been kind of a renewed, insurgence of those small schools being doing quite well and having teachers that are quite skilled at teaching crazy grade levels of kids. So it's not going away right now. I think there's always some amount of dollars from the state that makes it very challenging for those small schools to survive. And I think that's something that even this position can help have that conversation with, like, how, if that's something we want to have as a state in Montana, how do we keep it moving?
Yes.
What is not now being done in the office that you would like to see happen?
Did everybody hear the question?
Okay. That's a good question. I'm kind of an innovator and have always held high standards for education and believing holding the bar high. It's just personal ethic of mine. So I try to role model that, or do role model that, and I've brought a lot of innovations to the office. We've innovated in digitizing school records. We created an interactive school district boundary map. We brought the state spelling bee to Bozeman. So there's more work to be done. That's my passion, and I really enjoy doing that. So that's what I'll continue to do, is uphold high standards for education, continue to innovate. Really, the bottom line is it's for the sake of the children, of course, but also public service to the public.
So I would answer that by saying that I think, you know, the last few years have been really hard. They've been really hard on kids. I don't think we've even seen that in its fruition of what it means. It's been really hard on educators of any level. I think that what we are really looking for, and this office is a place that could help manage that, is how do we recover? You know, how do we keep teachers in the pipeline? How do we hire new teachers that are, you know, when we're having, you know, flocks of them leave? How do we engage kids? How do we bring some joy back to learning? And so all of that, to me, starts truly with the idea that, you know, you need to go out and engage those administrators and talk to them. What do they need? You know, we're talking a big district like Bozeman, which has, you know, thousands of kids, down to, you know, little districts that have, you know, 50, 60 kids. So could they sit at the table and have a conversation about their needs together and maybe help each other out? I think they can. So I think there's a lot of coming together and reconnecting that we can do between schools as well as between the communities in the schools, because we need our communities to support our schools for them to be healthy.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
I have actually two questions, if it's okay. So first question, as you can hear, my heavy accent came from Soviet Union, the USSR, and from my understanding, neither students nor teachers know the reality of socialism. So my question is, what you would recommend I can do to share my living experience with American youth and teachers? This is first question.
So I mean, I'll address that a little bit broadly and just say that I think one of the things that we have in, you know, I can speak to Bozeman, but really the county, all, you know, county goes all the way down to Big Sky and out to Three Forks, is that we have really amazing people doing amazing things with amazing histories. Some of them are in very organized, you know, nonprofits. Some of them are just people who have amazing experiences. How do we get those real people experiences connected to kids? That's what really makes school interesting, is not when you read it out of a textbook, but when you hear it from someone who's experienced it. And so, you know, one of the things I did as an instructional coach that I'd love to bring to the superintendency is to be that conduit who helps go, like, here's all these people who do all these things, come to me, talk to me. And then when that happens in a school, homeschool, whatever, that they're thinking of doing something like that, or they would like to connect, you would have some conduit of connection. That's really hard to do for teachers because they're very busy doing what they do all the time. But if someone outside can help them, that would be great.
I'm a bit of an American history buff myself. And if you follow trends in education, you know that there's been a lot of talk here in the last several years about civics education. And a renewed interest and a renewed concern that it be taught in schools. So I think you have a unique experience. And I would think there would be a lot of government teachers and history teachers and elementary teachers who would benefit from hearing you speak in the classroom. And my office does disseminate information on guest speakers and contests and grants, whatever information that we come across that might be valuable to school administrators. And I'd be glad to do that for you, put the word out that you have experience growing up in a socialist country and would be interested in speaking to kids about that. I think there would be people who would be interested in hearing that story.
Okay, and your second question.
So, second question. There is an extreme increase in children and youth self-identifies as gender non-binary or transgenders. It's extreme. It's 10 to 5,000 times. And it's directly correlated to the increase in children having suicidal thought or even committed suicide. Don't you think that too much attention in school to gender identity and linking genders to suicidal, gender non-conformed students to suicidal, can somehow create this social contagion and basically stimulate children to think and to question their gender identity?
Let me understand your question, that it encourages kids. Is that what you're thinking?
It could potentially promote children to think.
Yes, it does promote, yeah. Okay, do you understand the question, everybody? Okay.
John, you want to go?
No, go ahead if you want to come here.
Well, that's quite a question. I'll try to do it in 1 minute.
No, you can have a minute and a half.
Okay.
Give me my time.
Well, let's start. My personal view about transgenderism is that it's a very complex, it's a psychological condition, really, that I think parents are aware of that it's something that needs attention, and who best to be able to provide that attention than the parents and the parents' mental health counselor, school counselor. So what's happening in schools is that educators are compassionate people, and they want to accommodate and show compassion to people who are struggling with this particular condition, and that's noble. But they could be inadvertently creating, as you said, a social contagion. So I'm an education major, and I question whether educators are really the best people to address something that is complex as this. I really think it belongs in the realm of parents and their mental health counselors.
Okay. John?
I would say that, you know, the challenge to all this is, you know, what schools are supposed to do is they're supposed to take kids where they're at and families where they're at, and they're supposed to give them a safe place to learn. I don't think that they're supposed to categorize everybody. I think they're supposed to give people that choice, whether that's families or kids or families and kids, because we all know that changes with age, especially as kids grow up. I've been in the schools, and I have not seen anyone who openly and overtly is, you know, talking about what you were talking about, or directing kids toward that. And I've been in thousands of classrooms. I think I would step that back and say, as a culture, we're supposed to accept people where they're at. And so why not help out? I think, you know, the point of having counselors to help with that is great. But we also, that means we need more counselors in schools. We need people who are trained to talk to kids about that. That's not necessarily what teachers are trained to do. They've had to wear a lot of hats. And so I think it'd be nice to take away some of those hats and have some more professionals who are trained to wear those hats. But we're not, our person at OPI, our superintendent of schools, is trying to go the other way at the moment too. So she's trying to actually limit the number of per counselor. You can have more students per counselor than ever before in the state of Montana, is where she's headed with it.
Okay. Another question. Yes.
In the next legislative session, we're going to see a lot of talk and a lot of bills come forth about funding following the students, especially in the homeschool community. This really impacts us. So how do you feel? What are your thoughts on that? Which direction are you going to help your homeschool students fight for in the legislative session?
I can go first.
Okay.
So, I would answer that as, I mean, I do think that's a piece of what was created way back in the Constitution, way back with our start of our country, was that we wanted to educate kids. We wanted an education system. And so we signed on to that as a piece of being a U.S. citizen. I don't think that should change. I do think that we should have choice to be able to, you know, teach our kids in other ways. In part because the public schools don't necessarily solve every problem or work for every child, every kid. So I think that's a tough question. I think it would be a much easier question if we actually were funding the public schools the way they were intended to be funded at the moment. And it's always been such a battle to get them funded well. I think once we funded them, I think that would be fantastic to have the option where parents could pay less in order to take their, you know, to homeschool their kids. Because I certainly understand that if you're teaching your own kid and you're paying for other kids to go to school, that's hard to swallow sometimes. And at the same time, most of us had public school at some point. So somebody paid for us to go to school as well. It wasn't us paying. So.
Well, you're talking about educational choice and whether there's a need for it, and I think John and I would agree that you know, public schools, one size does not fit all. And when you think about homeschool families, usually it's the mom, as I mentioned. It's the mom who is choosing to forfeit the income that she might make in the workplace, and it's the family that has to bear the burden of buying books and buying curriculum as homeschoolers, and forsaking that income and yet paying taxes to the public school. So it seems like some sort of remedy to people who want choice is appropriate. And I think public schools have a great opportunity to realize that this is the movement, that people are seeking alternatives to public schools, and to think about ways that they could innovate, compete with public schools. And I encourage bills that would give people flexibility in education.
Okay. Yes, sir.
I'm curious about the extent to which county superintendents address legislatures and administrators at the state level. Is that a matter of choice? Is it done differently from county to county? And what do you imagine yourself doing as an advocate for students and families in schools in this county with the state level?
You want to make sure. Well, there's 56 counties in Montana, and every county has its county superintendent. And the opinions on that question would vary by them. Some are very active and feel that it's an appropriate role for them to advocate for the legislature on their own, and others do not. I can tell you that the law says that the county superintendent is not an advocacy position. Mm-hmm. It's ministerial, largely. So there are things that I may come, you know, bills that I see that I think that's a good idea, and I've not testified on any of those. Not that I'm unwilling, but it's really not my role. But I do support laws, and I uphold them.
I think the idea of that, I mean, the spirit of that question for me would be that, you know, this position is to advocate for kids. And so it would be really challenging not to advocate for kids. And it doesn't mean, you know, like the term that I'm not going to use is lobbying, even though I just used it. because I don't think that would be how I would use it. I think the idea is it's really educating. You know, I've had conversations with legislators before. I've had conversations with people in the Office of Public Instruction before who don't know. I mean, they truly don't know what you're up against in the schools or what kids, you know, are dealing with. And so it's less, that to me is less like lobbying and more like educating them and going, come see this, you know, can I sit at the table with you? You know, it's the Hamilton piece of I want to be in the room where that happens because I ask good questions. And I'm capable of poking where it makes them think. I don't get to make those decisions. We don't vote on things. But I think we can ask questions and we can stimulate some conversation that they're not having at that level.
Yes, ma'am.
What is your role with school boards? How do you interact with them? Or how you should? I mean, maybe there are new ways that somebody's thinking.
Yeah, no, you know, my understanding of how that works is that the county superintendent's role, and Matthew will probably speak to this more specifically, you can have conversations with the board. You also can do some trainings for the boards. There are county superintendents, I don't know if they do it here, who actually are a part of training, especially the small school districts' boards. You're also sort of an ear for them to talk to, because you have connections and you're disconnected from some of the, you know, like the parents in there or the teachers within their school. And so it's very much a complementary role that you have with all of the school boards. I think that's something I would love to get to know them. I don't believe that's gone on. There's lots to people to know, so that would be a task. But I think there's a lot of that isn't happening necessarily, just having the conversation so they have someone to talk to. If you think of even just being a superintendent in Bozeman, who do you get to talk to? You know, you're really kind of on an island. So I think that would be one of the pieces, is to try to make the island a little bigger.
Well, the law says that the county superintendent directly assists and advises schools that don't employ a school superintendent. So those four schools that we mentioned earlier, I work directly. I attend all their board meetings, and they ask my opinion and ask me questions, and I give them my feedback. I do professional development for the teachers in all the rural schools. And I swear in all newly elected or appointed trustees. So that's one of the roles of the county superintendent. Another one you may have heard of is the county superintendent appoints vacancies to the board in the event that there's a vacancy and the board doesn't fulfill that responsibility. But I think most of the boards in Gallatin County, there's 16 school districts, know that I'm at their beck and call. In fact, I had one here in the spring that was concerned about, you know, their turnover of superintendents and invited me to come down to their meetings and just discuss what I thought was going on. So I think they know I'm there, and I try to encourage them and inspire them and give them advice whenever they ask for it.
Are we good? Oh, Bruma.
No. Okay. What kind of communication do you have with other superintendents in the county, and what? How might you improve upon that communication? If I assume it exists in some way.
Did everybody hear the question?
What type of communication occurs amongst different superintendents of the schools in the county? Because you have one position, and there's superintendents of the Bozeman schools. Anyway, what type of communication do you have with them, and what do you see as future ways to improve or do some things that haven't been done?
Thank you.
Sure. Well, I've got the red hotline to all the superintendents in Gallatin County, and I use it. Judiciously. I mean, if there is information that I can disseminate to school superintendents, which we did during COVID, there was health information that at the onset of the pandemic that the health department had asked me to disseminate, and I gladly do that. If there are issues or concerns that relate to my office and to them, I communicate. Directly with them, usually by email, but you know, sometimes they call me. Mm-hmm. And they'll call me because they have things that warrant my attention, whether it's school district budget stuff, election stuff. There's just a variety of things that school district superintendents interact with my office on. So I think they think I'm pretty approachable, and I try not to abuse knowing that I can ping them with an email. I will say this, when I call, they answer the phone, and I try to be mindful of that as well, that, you know, it's not the long arm of the county intervening in their lives, so.
Okay. John?
I think, you know, knowing many of the superintendents, I think one of the things they would actually really enjoy is actually, and given that that was a challenge in the pandemic era, they would enjoy getting together to do something productive. It's not that anybody wants another meeting. I don't. I don't think probably most of you want another meeting. But the idea that they can get together and have conversations that are of interest to them is really important for, you know, all those extraneous pieces that they're dealing with right now, from mental health of kids to teacher shortages to housing shortages. And all of those kind of professional pieces, I think it's just about getting all the right people together that want to have that conversation and help each other out. I think the big districts can help the small districts, and the small districts can help the big districts. And part of the equation that I know has not happened is the private schools are not talking to the public schools, and the public schools are not talking to the private schools. And I've talked to both of them, and both of them would love to do that. But this is an ideally situated position to do just that, and that has not happened in the past. It's really kind of a critical time at the moment to try and get them to have more conversations, because we have kids bouncing back and forth with more regularity than ever before who are homeschooled, private schooled, and public schooled in the span of 3 years in three different places. That's not usually how it works, but it is late. There's more of that lately. It's not a lot, but there are more.
Okay. One more. Quick.
With all the horrors of Soviet Union, I must admit that in America, America has catastrophically low quality of math and science education. As county superintendent, can you change this?
You can change what?
Yeah.
You
can ask a question.
Masking, I believe. So masking?
No,
math and science.
Math and science.
Oh, sorry.
You know, I'll start this one. I think it's my turn to go first. I think this position isn't probably going to drive most of that. I think you can ask the questions. I think you can help train teachers. I think you can. But it's not one that, you know, we're not out dictating, other than the four small schools, really what goes on precisely. I think, you know, from knowing some of the other districts in the county, they're working on that too. You know, and they're aware of some of the data that shows that there are things that are not as impressive as we would like them to be, whether that be reading scores, math scores, science knowledge, whatever. I think part of that is just that it's hard to change that ship when you have lots of us talk about the education system as being a glacier, and, you know, historically glaciers change slowly. Well, that's mm-hmm. changing now too, and so, you know, we had the last 3 years where things changed quickly. So I think we can take the positives of what we tried and move forward. into the next, and that maybe is a great opening for things like how do we do math and science better and different.
Okay, I think no,
Kathy. Matthew, oh. Let's go too.
I'm sorry.
Well,
I do that all the time. You have to whip on me, but I'm sorry.
We're watching.
Good, not good. You need to go.
Thanks. Math and science scores have probably been in the decline in the United States for longer than just before the pandemic. And I think if we're going to see improvement in that, we're going to have to take a hard look at what's going on in the classroom and why is this happening and why are we unable to turn it around. We spend more and more money on education, but we don't seem to be getting results from it. Maybe it's because there's not a correlation between spending more money in education and improving test scores. If we're going to spend money, maybe we should consider incentivizing people who are able to produce the test scores or reward those people who are able to produce the test scores. I think it's time for schools, especially in the pandemic, especially in the tumult that they're in right now, for them to analyze what are we doing, why are we losing market share, why are people leaving the public schools, why are they homeschooling, why are they disgruntled, what can we do? And I think as the county superintendent, I can help in that conversation. I have high standards for education myself, and we'd be glad to facilitate that conversation with superintendents and school boards and can give them some ideas.
Okay. So now we're going to give each candidate 2 minutes to wrap up and explain exactly why you should vote for them. And who wants to go first?
I started. Do you want to go first?
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Well, my campaign slogan is representing your values in K-12 education. And it's a countywide office, which means that I represent all the views and viewpoints and values of Gallatin County residents. And when I talk to Gallatin County residents, I sense that there's a concern out there about what's going on in education. And primarily, it is the sense that schools have strayed from their purpose to be academic centers of learning. And I think most people in Gallatin County still feel that education should be in the business of serving children, serving parents, serving their communities, and that it should not be something that is a corrupting influence on children, but rather one that lifts them up intellectually. It should be an academic endeavor that prepares them for life after school to be productive citizens in whatever pursuit that they want to choose to follow. So again, my personal ethic is I've always held high standards for education. I always felt that education can accomplish much. And I've tried to model that throughout my career. I try to model that as the county superintendent and encourage schools and school boards and remind them of the important responsibility that they have. And I feel in one small way that I can encourage them by upholding the law and encouraging parents and assisting parents and guiding them along the way in this pursuit of education. I'm not pro-public school, I'm not anti-public school, I'm not pro-homeschool, I'm not anti. What I am is I'm pro-quality education. I'm pro-let parents decide what is the best avenue for their children to get educated and let them pursue it.
Thank you. John?
So first of all, thanks for coming out and listening and asking good questions. You know, the question then is, you know, why should you vote for me? The pieces that I bring to the table are different, and so that's really your choice. I have a broader experience of grade levels taught, of schools that I've been in, of experiences as an educator. Those are things that I bring to the table to do what's right for kids. I think kids are very different. You know, you can sit in any classroom and they're not the same, and they're not even in the same grade level, but they're in the same grade level. So, you know, we have very challenging places that we put a lot of pressure on teachers and the administration of schools to manage. And therefore, we end up with people who want something different, which is great. I think we should have homeschooling and we should have private schools that give good options. We have more of those now in the county than we had 3 years ago in fairly large number. The trick to all of that is that there still needs to be a real focus on what kids need. What kids need, hopefully, is quite directed by their families, and not by the national politics that go on. And so we can do what's right because that's what's right. I mean, we have a ton of science behind how kids learn. We have a ton of practice about what actually works and helps kids learn in the classroom. It's not really rocket science, to be totally honest. But kids have to be engaged. They have to be interested. They have to have interesting people in front of them doing things. And that's what we need to bring back. We've lost much of that in the last few years. I think, and that's for a variety of reasons. But it's not this job. It's not our job to complain about it. It's our job to help fix it. And that's what I'm here for. I want to help be a solution to the problems that we have that are mounting still.
Okay. Thank you both very much.
That concludes the portion of the candidate forum held on Thursday, October 20th, 2022, at the Bozeman Public Safety Center. This part of the forum featured candidates for Gallatin County Superintendent of Schools. KGVM does not endorse any candidate or take a particular position on any ballot issue. We strive to disseminate available information to help voters make informed decisions.